I think I can tell that the show is already on its way because my low food light is coming on. So, I mean, we must be halfway through the show.
Why didn't you go to breakfast this morning?
Because I slept late.
So, introduce our next guest,
I will.
Please.
I mean, what do you think? I'm a rocket scientist? Come on. But we just happen to have somebody who started out as a rocket scientist at MIT. You're the people we all talk about. Anna Dietrich, we're so happy to have you here. And people may not know a lot about rocket science, but they certainly have heard of Terrafugia. I mean, that the car that's going to fly? Oh, sure, a lot of people said. And it's been quite an experiment. But you've kind of moved on, and you're involved in the urban air mobility and planning aspect of aviation. So welcome to Attitude Adjustment.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
I mean, I think I'm most curious about what you're doing now because, I mean, how do you improve after Terrafugia?
Well, actually, what I'm doing now has really been kind of a nice evolution from the founding role that I had with Terrafugia. When you start something from scratch, you get to do pretty much everything. And it gave me an opportunity to find the pieces that I was really passionate about. So it turns out that I have, you know, I am technically a rocket scientist. I do have two aerospace engineering degrees. But the piece that I found that I'm really interested in focusing on and what I'm doing now is the regulatory and the policy environment. So how do you certify something that is a truly innovative and weird and unique aircraft and make sure that we're applying all of those generations of safety knowledge that we've accumulated over the years to those new ideas and working with the FAA to do that? And then also, how do we integrate these new technologies and this innovation into society in a way that is a really good neighbor and can benefit our communities, that we're going beyond public acceptance to really having communities embrace where we're going as an aviation industry?
I think having spent a decade of my life as an air traffic controller, I think when I first started hearing about these ventures, I said, let's see how they're going to keep them all apart when they start flying in an urban area like where I'm from in Chicago. So I think, what can you tell us about that aspect of it right now? Where do we stand?
Air traffic control is obviously a key piece of the puzzle. There's sort of three legs of the stool that I think about when we're bringing this new industry to market. And one is the aircraft certification and the technology itself, so building the aircraft, certifying the aircraft. The other is operating the aircraft. So who are you training to fly these aircraft? What do they need to know? And then the third is the airspace integration and how are you going to integrate with other traffic and with communities? And those are all sort of, you know, evolving and developing together. And I think one of the key things to keep in mind is that while there's a lot of ambition and I think promise for a significant number of these aircraft in the airspace in an urban environment, that's not going to happen tomorrow. Even in the most aggressive projections that we have, it's still a bit of a crawl, walk, run approach. So we have the opportunity to test things out. We have the opportunity to see what works. We could start doing urban air mobility operations today with existing helicopter routes for a lot of these aircraft, with some modifications in some cases, but the paradigm holds. So we can start very, with what we're comfortable with and evolve from there. And I like to point out that when we first started having automobiles hit the streets, there were cities that required that you hire somebody to walk in front of your car because they were scared of what would happen with all of these things going super fast. So we went from literally having to hire somebody to walk in front of you while you drove down the road to interstate highways. And that happened, you know, organically as the technology progressed. So I think we'll see something similar. We can start safely and small and grow from there.
That is a detail that nobody I know knows, that you actually had to hire somebody to walk in front of your car in the beginning. So, you know, one of the questions that I have is, what about regulation? I mean, we don't even have regulations that stipulate how you build these, how you certify them.
Well, we do and we don't. So I had the privilege of being part of the Part 23 rulemaking effort that concluded in 2017. So we completely rewrote Part 23, which, for those who aren't certification geeks, that's the part of the CFRs, the Code of Federal Regulations, that most general aviation aircraft are required to comply it with. And what we did with that rule was we took it from being very prescriptive of you have to do this in this way to you have to meet this safety objective. And that opened things up to new technology and new types of aircraft that wouldn't previously have been certifiable under that regulation. So by moving into this performance-based rule language, now we can build means of compliance that are much more focused and specific to technologies. And that combination is very powerful for incorporating new technology. So we do actually have a mechanism by which we can certify these aircraft. We can use a lot of the Part 23, Amendment 64, which is the new one, language. We can use ASTM and other industry consensus standards as means of compliance. And where we've identified gaps, we're actively working as a community to fill those gaps and write standards and work with the FAA to figure out what to do with the pieces that haven't already been anticipated.
And I got a number this morning that blew my mind, which is there's an estimated 155 companies that are developing eVTOL.
Yeah, it's a very hot space right now.
Yeah, that one made me sit down for a second. And basically, what Dan Schwinn, who is the founder of Avidyne, said was that a lot of our issues right now are with connectivity and bandwidth, and how are we going to do autonomous when LTE above about 600 feet doesn't work, and it never really was enough bandwidth to begin with.
That's one of the areas of focus. I'll put a plug in for the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, GAMA. They have an Electric Propulsion Innovation Committee. A lot of the eVTOL manufacturers are participants in that committee. I would say most of the ones that I'm aware of that are sort of fairly credible are part of that group. So it's a large group. And one of the focuses that we have in that association at this point is actually Datacom. So we are standing up an effort there to address some of these concerns and make sure that we have the spectrum that we need. There's a lot of promise with 5G. So hopefully we'll be able to get a slice of that pie and use it for what we need for these aircraft.
Yeah, and it's going to have to be some kind of hardened 5G, I would think.
That is entirely outside of my wheelhouse, but there are people
enough
that know what they're talking about that are working on it that I have confidence in.
Yeah, but if a rocket scientist can't understand it, how are we going to understand it?
Well, I just have other things that I'm worried about understanding right now.
That's really what it is. And speaking of other things that she's worried about, tell us a little bit more about the Community Air Mobility Initiative, CAMI, that you're involved with.
So we're doing a soft rollout of CAMI at the show this year. We just incorporated the association. It is a nonprofit. I'm one of the co-founders of it. And our focus is to provide state and local decision makers the tools and the information that they need to make responsible, educated decisions about how to integrate these aircraft into their communities. So there's so much that's happening. Technology is moving so fast. To the point about 5G, there's so much to understand. No one person can understand all of these pieces. So we want to have this association to provide resources at the state and local level. So for local zoning commissions, for state legislators, people that have to make the decisions about how we're going to integrate these aircraft into the fabric of our lives, and making sure that they can do that from a position of being well-informed and understanding all of the benefits as well as all of the potential risks that are available to them with this industry.
Wow, that's so smart. I mean, when you think about it, because you don't want the regulation that says somebody has to get out in front of this aircraft and walk.
Right. We want to integrate these aircraft safely and practically and use the existing infrastructure, both regulatory and air traffic control and physical, that we have today. So we're just now, like I said, we're doing a soft rollout. There's still an opportunity to become a founding member of the organization. So if you're one of those 150 plus companies in the space or another participant in the urban air mobility ecosystem, you can go to communityairmobility.org and put in a request for more information, and we can start that conversation.
You know, something I'm wondering is, we just mentioned 155 companies at least that are trying to explore this space. For the folks like me who are not rocket scientists, that are wondering, how could there be 155 different options or possibilities? Could you break it down into some categories or something of what these vehicles might be?
Sure. There's a few sort of broad categories. The way in which you convert from vertical to horizontal flight is a key differentiator. So some aircraft have motor pods that tilt So they start off pointing up and then they tilt to go forward. There's some that have two separate systems where there's one set of motors that turn on to get you off the ground, and then there's another set that pushes you forward. And then there's some that stay rotor-borne the whole flight. So there's some that do not have wing-borne flight at all, but operate a little bit more like a rotorcraft in that perspective, where they stay on their rotors the whole flight. I would say the thing that unites a lot of these aircraft is the use of distributed electric propulsion, which has huge benefits from a safety and reliability perspective, but it also helps with the community integration side of it, because it's going to be quieter. These aircraft are going to be a lot quieter than anything that people are used to, particularly than the helicopters that folks are used to flying in urban environments.
Well, yeah, because you're dealing with electric, and electric is a way different kind of energy. Are you speaking in a forum here this week?
I'm not. I'm actually here as a pseudo-private citizen this year for the first time in 15 years.
Awesome.
But we do have information about CAMI at the Gamma booth, so feel free to drop by there and pick something up. And I'll be there off and on as well. But mostly I'm just be enjoying the show with my two little kids.
Oh, fantastic. So if you want information about the Community Air Mobility Initiative, it's communityairmobility.org. Or at the General Aviation Manufacturers Association booth here on the field. Anna Dietrich, we thank you so much for coming in and explaining a small part of this very complicated but tremendously exciting new horizon for aviation.
I'm going to be very curious to see what it's like in 5 years when we have you back.
Me too. Looking forward to it. Thank you.